Gorgeous George and Ghost, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's up, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Ghost reporting for duty here on a Wednesday night for your Thursday morning delivery, and we're excited to talk to you for the next hour or so as we discuss the latest in mixed martial arts and other combat sports. I'm not going to lie. It happens every once in a while, so I throw that out kind of like to save us. All right. So, two interviews headed your way. Anthony Pettis and Michael Chandler, when we'll discuss the latest news, a few things happening here as we close out 2023 with some fighters stepping in on short notice for fighters who have gotten injured. We'll be right back to start the show. Should be a good one. All right, folks. So before we get into the show, just want to say our dear city of Las Vegas is going through yet another tragedy. Earlier today, there was a gunman at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas campus, Goes' alma mater, who killed three people, and including him, there's four dead on that campus. So it was a shooting. And I believe when it's four or more, it's regarded as a mass shooting. And it's sad. So our hearts go out to those affected, not just the ones that passed away. Of course, those paid the ultimate price for somebody's cowardly act. But, you know, their families. And then there's going to be a lot of people that are shaken up. And I heard something interesting on the radio today. Can you imagine if you somehow, whether it was you directly or someone you knew, and you were affected by that shooting 1 October of 2017, and then somehow are attached to this one? Jeez, that's just horrible. So keep them in your thoughts and prayers. Goes, it was your school. That's where you got your psychology degree. Is there anything you want to say before we start the show? Because I know that you are very familiar with where this took place. I mean, you could probably picture.
Oh yeah,
picture what happened as they described it.
Perfectly. You know, it sucks because in my lifetime, other than college, I just never ever thought in the back of my mind or anything that something like that would ever happen. And I say up until college because I was initially accepted and was going to go to Virginia Tech. And the year that I was supposed to go into Virginia Tech is when they had their shooting. Mm-hmm. So I would have been well aware of all that. But I never had that feeling at UNLV. And the place where this went down is very, very heavily populated. And I've had classes before in Beam Hall. And so it's right next door to the student union. And the student union is always packed. And so from what I heard today, where they had this was right outside of those two buildings. And what a lot of times they'll do is, like, when they're pledging fraternities, or they'll have like fun little exercises out in that little area where, like, I'll give you an example. When I went to school there, they would always have during finals week, like a beat up old car. And then you would go out there and you were allowed to beat the crap out of it, basically, to relieve stress.
Mm-hmm.
And they would put that there in that area. So there was just always a lot of people, kind of like when you watch the movies, a high school campus, when people are just eating outside and stuff and just kind of sitting, that's that area. So this guy that did that, did it in one of the most highly populated areas on campus. Mm. And it sucks. Nobody should have to worry about any of this type of stuff when you're going to school like that. You're there to learn. You're there to experience college, meet new people, not have to worry about this bullshit. And luckily, when I was there, there was a decent amount of security, but there's also like a mini police station there too. So there was just always police or security around. There's phones where you can call if you see anything. And it just so happened to be somebody very close when that went down and probably saved a lot of lives.
Yeah, definitely want to commend the first responders. They acted quickly, put this guy away, and they haven't released a name or anything. In fact, one could say, how do you know it was a guy? They kind of let that one squeak out, I think. But either way, three lives were lost. I think there's a victim at the hospital who's stable. And then along the way, like I said, this is just going to mentally traumatize a lot of people. Man, imagine being a freshman away from college. You didn't book it home for Thanksgiving. You said, nah, I'll just power through, get through my finals, and then I'll come home. And now you're going to come home pretty shaken up. Maybe decide to stay home or who knows. But here's the thing, folks. You know, that other one was at Mandalay Bay. That was our home for 11 years. Every day. How do you guys think we got to 3,400 episodes? Every day for 15 years we did that show, and 11 of them were at Mandalay Bay. That guy, when he did the shooting, it was found out later on, he had checked in like 2 weeks prior. Now, that was when I wrecked my knee, so I wasn't personally there. But Ghost and Dan Tom were, and I just think about how many times they may have, because this guy would go back and forth to bring his stuff in through suitcases. Did they ever stand next to him at the Starbucks line? Did they ever wash their hands next to him after taking a leak? Did they ever park their cars next to this guy or share an elevator? It's kind of creepy, man, to know that guy lived there for 2 weeks as he was preparing that whole, you know, to do that. So that was pretty close to home.
Yeah, we walked in through the same door every day.
That was like a ground zero. And then this other one, this UNLV thing, man, that can be pretty haunting. But anyway, a lot of you know that we like to share our personal lives with you. And Goz and I actually had a little bit of a business meeting downtown. Normally, we get there in half an hour. It took us 2 hours today because freeways were shut. Streets were overloaded. There was detours, closures. And we finally got there. But luckily, the person that we were meeting with understood because this was big news here in Las Vegas. So we got there and all that. But man, like, just this is really, really a sad time. Any shooting is a sad time, but Vegas around the late September, there's always that reminder of the anniversary date. I mean, that was the worst one, I think, in United States history in terms of the numbers of dead and injured and all that. And
yeah,
it took the city a long time to recover for that one. And now this thing happened here.
Terrible. You know, it as bad as the first shooting was, if you could pull out any silver lining, it's that it took a community that when I first moved here, it was very divided because everybody normally, I'd say 50% of the people that are here in Vegas have come from somewhere else. It's kind of not odd, but when you hear somebody say, yeah, I'm born and raised here. You go, oh, really? You know, and it should kind of be the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like back home where all of your neighbors usually grew up with you there. Some of them in that the same house. Over here, everybody comes from somewhere else. And so that sense of community wasn't really there as much. But after that shooting with the Vegas Golden Knights just going on, and it just kind of brought the whole community together. And that's something that has stayed since that time. And so if anything, I think the people here in Las Vegas have shown that they can stay together, be together, and overcome things. And it's just unfortunate that we have to deal with this again, you know, and even in a different situation. And it's a situation that, like, a lot of people, you know, or maybe yourself, a lot of people go to college. A lot of people go to concerts. To not feel safe in these environments is pitiful. It's something that's got to change.
Completely agree. And that was the first season of the Vegas Golden Knights. I think they started the season a few days later. And so they honored the first responders, some of the survivors there. And then, of course, the Vegas Golden Knights went on a magical run. A lot of you will recall they made it to the Stanley Cup Finals. They lost to the Washington Capitals, but they made it. And that was pretty historic for a franchise, you know, to do that in their first year in any sport. So to get to the Stanley Cup Finals, and they actually won game one of the Stanley Cup Finals, and then I think Washington came back and won the next four. But either way, it was the community, the Las Vegas community, did become closer because of that. And it also helped that there was just a new team in town, a new show in town that a lot of people could go to that was successful. And they, if you've ever watched the Vegas Golden Knights, they play a fun brand of hockey, and they make the show, it's sporting, but it's entertainment as well. Some might view it as a little corny, I guess, if you're kind of hardcore Northeast, from a Northeast city where you show up to watch hockey, to see some fights and throw down some beers and go home. Over here, it's a little glitz and glamour. But either way, I think people have gotten used to it. And even the people that come to town and watch, they say, hey, that's pretty cool. But a lot of that, like I say, was spearheaded by a bunch of players. They called themselves the Misfits. They were castaways from other teams, and they came and they played well, and maybe they were inspired by the city. Who knows? But yeah, that was 6 years ago, and here we're going to have to go through it again.
Yeah, it's like, you know, almost, you guys always hear, you know, we're from the mean streets of Santa Ana. That's where we grew up. That's where we were raised. But I've been here quite a while, and George is only 1 year behind me. And we have really adopted and adapted to this city and watched this city grow. You have to remember that this city grows like 2 to 3 times faster than any other place that you know of, just because of how much money comes in and all the new restaurants and buildings that get built so quickly. So this hurts. It hits us in the heart because this is our new home, and we've been here long enough where it does really cut you, you know. Even though we love Orange County and that is home, Vegas has been our home now for quite a while. And so, this one sucks.
So you're 45, right?
I'm 45.
And you got here at 29. So 29 years in California. And now you've done 16 years in Las Vegas. So yeah, it's definitely evening out for you. Anyway, folks, if you know anyone in Vegas, reach out to them. You never know if somebody has a kid that went there or works, or somebody that might work there, or somebody that might be a teacher there. Who knows? A few people reached out to us, and that was very nice. You know, Gil's graduated in 2010, so it's been a while. But either way, he has been known to go to that campus to catch a hoops game from time to time or whatever. And I think Ghost says he knows some friends that work there, right, Brian?
Yeah, they were in lockdowns for 3 hours.
Damn, that's crazy. That's, I don't know. I hope I never have to go through that. All right. Well, let's get to some of the news, and then we'll talk to Anthony Pettis. I believe he's queued up first. One thing that jumped out at me, goes, was for UFC 296, the co-main event is Alexander Pantoja. He defends his flyweight title against Brandon Royval. Solid matchup. I love it. It's organic. This guy just beat Brandon Moreno for the title, did Pantoja. His first title defense is against Royval, who's worked his way through appropriately. But guess who the backup fighter is? It's actually Brandon Moreno. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking, well, that's kind of cool, I think. I mean, he isn't a sellable name. Probably a bigger name than either one of the other two. But why him? Like, not to go back and steal Dan Tom's thunder, but there does seem, it was either him or Matt Wells. Boy, the UFC likes to reheat a lot of food in the microwave and bring it back out to us. I'm not hating Moreno. And anyway, A, he's a gangster. B, his fights never suck. C, he sells fights. He gets people excited to watch fights, including the big country of Mexico that's so passionate for its combat sports heroes. I don't want anyone to take that as me hating, but I'm just thinking, like, a guy like Amir Albazi, I'm not sure. I think he's only lost once in his career. you know, he's looked pretty good as of late, right?
I think he just got booked, though, right? Like yesterday or the day before.
Right, but before that happened, why not him be the backup for this? Like, why Marino? I mean, if Marino gets himself a paycheck and doesn't fight, all right, cool. I'm not going to hate on anyone's hustle at all. But if they do, in fact, need him, why him? What if he was so needed, then run it back and just say, we thought Marino was a quality champion and he deserves a running back. They know they can't tell us that because we did a 4-series between him and Figueiredo, right? So that was shoved down our throats quite a bit. So mm-hmm. to feel like, you know, like I say, if they would have just been upfront and honest and said, yeah, you know what? He deserves the rematch, the immediate rematch. I guess I would have, I probably would have criticized it and then said, but here we are and ready to enjoy it. But why he's going in as the backup fighter just trips me out. It's just these bizarre decisions the UFC makes.
I don't really trust anyone, to be honest, in this position because this is a little bit different. We're very close. We're in the middle of holiday season. I don't know. Unless you have a fight, I think people purposely avoid this time because they want to be able to eat whatever they want at Thanksgiving and hang out with family and go on vacations. Mm-hmm. If you look at Brandon Marino just the other day, and he had like a picture of pancakes and I don't know what he was gorging on. Like, I don't know that anybody's really in fighting shape right now. So I kind of don't trust anyone, but that is a little odd. Yeah.
I mean, Manel Kopp just had a nice win in Australia. He's booked to fight Matias Nicolau, but like I said, they could have not booked him against Matias Nicolau and just said, you're the backup. You know, he's a fresh name. Amir Albazi's a fresh name. Askar Askarov, he's a fresh name. I mean, I guess he just lost to Kaikara France, but I don't know. No, that was like a year ago that he lost to him. But regardless, so I think Kopp and Albazi are just two decent names to freshen things up.
Yeah, it's just weird.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, chances are we're not even, hopefully we don't need them, right?
Speaking of, yeah, I guess in a way, you're right. We hopefully don't need them. And the two guys that deserve to be there can make the walk. There is another fight switch. This one actually comes a week sooner because that fight is December 16th. We'll be doing a UFC 296 watch along. So tune in like you always do for us on those watch alongs, especially those of you that choose not to get the pay-per-view will be your eyes and ears. But this week there's UFC Fight Night 233. And this week we had a switch. So Sue Mudejeri is now facing Tim Elliott. Any thoughts on this fight? Elliott is the one that's stepping in on late notice, less than 2 weeks, maybe even less than that. It all depends on when they actually found out about this news and, you know, how long they've known or whatever. But you have any thoughts on this one?
It's funny because one of the last dudes I would ever want to face on short notice is a guy like Tim Elliott, because his cardio always seems to be down. He's always in the gym and he's just so awkward. You know, no matter what it is you're preparing for, mm-hmm. throw it out the window, because now you got to deal with this Tasmanian devil. Mm-hmm. He's kind of like one of those guys that no matter what, I would hate to have to face that guy on short notice. I think he's kind of a live dog on this one.
He is. He's got that wrestling. He's got cardio and he's experienced. So this won't faze him one bit. It might be a tougher weight cut or whatever, but he'll be fine. But here's the thing. He lost to Mokaev, if you'll recall,
right?
At the UFC 294 in October. Why didn't they call Mokaev? But he's undefeated, for crying out loud.
Oh, you know what? It might be him that I think has a fight. But yeah, but Mokaev is a stud. I like that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. It's odd.
I mean, he always says he wants to fight more often, so I would have thought I'd go to the guy that won his most recent fight than the guy that lost. Although I guess in a way Mokaev could possibly even be regarded more as a title challenger. Who knows? That Alan Nascimento was the one that was supposed to face Tim Elliott, but was supposed to fight Sue Mudejeri. He's out. Nascimento's out. Elliott steps in. I guess this one doesn't bother me as much as hearing the thing about Marino. And maybe Mokaev has you know, maybe they have other plans for him. But he, I remember him clearly saying he wants to fight more often, and he was a little disappointed he doesn't fight more often. So hopefully he at least got that call. Maybe he turned it down, or who knows what. He's got Alex Perez in Saudi Arabia, but that's not till March.
True.
Yeah. I just like the idea of being close to the champion in terms of the timeline. So fighting 1 week before in this town and sticking around, you know, I don't know. I think that would have been key. All right, let's get to our first guest, Anthony Pettis. He's got a fight coming up at Karate Combat on December 15th here in Las Vegas. You can watch the fights for free on their YouTube channel, youtube.com/Karate Combat. Pretty easy to remember. His opponent will be Benson Henderson. This will be the third time they've tangled. Once when Anthony Pettis beat Benson Henderson for the WEC featherweight title, that's when the Showtime kick was unleashed. And then they fought again in the UFC, and he submitted Benson Henderson. And at that time, Benson was the most unsubmittable fighter in the UFC. Like, there had been 50 attempts at a submission, and he had defended them all. And Pettis actually got him kind of quick. A lot of us had this, even the broadcast team was like, what happened? What just happened? Did he do it? It was in Milwaukee, actually, too, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, he's beaten him twice. So this should be interesting. We'll be right back with Showtime. What is up, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Gozer back with another superstar in the world of combat sports. We've covered him through WEC, through the UFC, PFL. Now he's getting down for Karate Combat. Karate Combat's actually taking place here in Las Vegas, and an old foe has popped up. He will meet him in that pit at KC43 on December 15th. Don't worry, it's free on YouTube. Check it out. You go to youtube.com/Karate Combat, which, by the way, looks to be a pretty cool channel. So hit that like and subscribe for those guys, and you'll see some cool stuff there. Welcome back, Showtime. How are you?
Good, man. Can't complain. Just in between training sessions like always.
Yeah. All right. So what drew you to Karate Combat? Aside from, I get it, you're a prize fighter. They probably sent you something, you know, that impressed you there. But what were you drawn to? Highlights? Was it the opponent? What was it?
Man, honestly, a little bit of all of it. I was watching Karate Combat for a while. I just didn't know, like, who was running the program on the show over there, if you will. But so I was getting ready for a boxing fight in February. So I was already in training camp. I was ready in shape, you know, not in fight shape, but I was, you know, preparing my body to go into a camp. And the opportunity came up, you know, it was in Las Vegas, Nevada. I'm a resident here now, my second hometown. And then the opponent, obviously Ben Henderson, we got so much history together. Just all made sense.
Mm-hmm. By the way, speaking of boxing, did any part of you ever think of just, hey, 1-0 against an all-time great, I'm out? Or you really want to pursue that some more, it sounds like?
No, 100%. I want to pursue it more, man. I'm sparring good guys. I just sparred Lara Tuesday. I'm sparring him again tomorrow. He's getting ready for Danny Garcia. I sparred Caleb Plant for his last camp. So, I mean, I know my skill set in boxing is, you know, I didn't have the opportunities to fight over there yet. So, yeah, this year I plan on doing at least 3 boxing fights.
Oh, wow. Okay. You mean 2024, right?
2024, yeah, of course.
All right. And so
if I could do 3 fights in 2023, that'd be G.
that'd be like UFC 1 all in one night or something like that. All right. So now let's get back to Karate Combat. Benson Henderson, you know, you're a gambler. I know you are. Don't hide it. You're playing with house money here. You know what I mean? You got some dubs on him. But at the same time, what do you think from his end, man? Do you think, I wouldn't mind evening the score here? Does that kind of get you motivated to know that this guy's not going to just mail this one in either?
Now, he's not an easy opponent, bro. Like, we fought twice already. Like, the first fight was such a close fight, even though standing, striking, the ground portion was a very close fight. Second fight, obviously, I had my success with, you know, the body kicks. But Ben's a competitor, bro. Like, I got nothing but respect for that dude. Like, you know, we've been doing this for, you know, 10 years plus now each. And he's still competing at the highest level, man. So I know he's coming to bring it. Obviously, he has something to prove. You know, every time that Showtime kick, you know, they basically made the promo off that Showtime kick. I heard the pit was designed off of that, the Karate Combat pit. Mm-hmm. So for sure, I think Ben's, you know, going to come out there and try to even the score up. So, I mean, I'll be ready for whatever he brings.
Mm-hmm. By the way, That first fight was something else. You think one day it should be in the Hall of Fame for the UFC, which owns WEC rights and all that? You think it was on that level?
I mean, they use the highlight in every pay-per-view, so I definitely think it should be up there. You know, the fight was back and forth. You know, until that Showtime kick, you know, we didn't know who the winner was going to be. I didn't know who the winner was going to be. And then, you know, I landed that Showtime kick, and I feel like that just gave me the edge to get that belt, one of these belts right here. But so I think for you know, Hall of Fame stuff, I think we got to wait till we retire. We got to, like, you know, see, me and Ben are still active.
This is true. I think Guida is part of one of those, and he's still active. But yeah,
that's true. Definitely.
Yeah, I just remember it being, I think, 2-2, right, going into round five, and that definitely sealed the deal. I just remember Stephen Bonner, may he rest in peace. He almost came out of his chair along with everyone else that was either there or in person.
Yeah, man, right? Bonner, you know, his quote will always live in my heart. You know, like, you know, he ran off a wall like a ninja. You know, see, so yeah, definitely rest in peace to Bonner.
Yeah, for sure. All right, and so have you consulted other? Have you done your own research or consulted others as far as, like, the familiarity of the rules, the pit? You know, Goz was interviewing somebody the other day as well. I think it was actually for Karate Combat. It was Sam Alvey. Just a simple angle going from six-sided to four-sided to eight-sided to perfectly round can throw some people off. Do you think it could throw you off?
Well, I think the pit, the way it's angled, that's something I never fought on before. You know, fighting on my back at I don't even know the degree of the angle, but, you know, I've seen the guys on their back and, you know, trying to defend. You know, when you're not on the ground and, you know, the defense isn't there. Like, a lot of my moves come from jumping off the fence, bouncing off the fence. So I think defensively, it definitely changed it up. But I feel like offensively, I'm going to be able to use it to my advantage. You know, I'll be able to jump off that thing. I'll be able to climb up it, walk around it. So I'm excited to go in there and have some fun with that.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about the training? I know you mentioned you have been doing some boxing. The going back and forth, how is that for you? Some fighters say that sometimes it takes them, like, a little bit for them to just kind of get back into the throwing kicks versus the boxing, the angles, as George brought up, the positioning and all that. What's that like, going back and forth with the training?
I love it, bro. I think I'm a martial artist my whole life. So I feel like, you know, the high-level boxers I'm sparring with, I mean, Lara, world champ. I mean, he's fighting Danny Garcia coming up soon. Like, that level of competition, it's hard to get that. You know, it's even in the MMA world, you know, like, it's hard to get a guy that's good with that skill level. And he's a southpaw. So, I mean, we purposely chose a southpaw for me to, you know, use my – keep continual boxing, you know, sparring. Because I know I'm kind of getting ready for whatever's coming off for next year. But I am a lifelong martial artist. You know, this is something I've done forever. Like I come from a point sparring background. So I feel like this favors me definitely, you know, like having the ability to throw any strike I want without having to worry about, you know, getting taken down or getting pressed against the fence. I mean, if you watch our first couple fights, a lot of the success came from that, pushing me against the fence, holding me on the fence. Doing some moves that I've, you know, never seen before on the fence, but he won't have that opportunity this one round. So I feel like that's why I said yes to this. It plays well into what I've done my whole life.
Anthony, so this matchup in my mind has been a nightmare to break down because I feel like there's so many little subplots in here. And I try and put myself in Benson Henderson's shoes, and we were talking about the Showtime kick. And I'm thinking, look, you've got two wins on him, so he's not going to even score there. But do you think, is there a little part of him that you think might want to get that back as far as the Showtime kick, like something that dazzles the fans that he can maybe land on you, you know, spinning attacks, that sort of stuff? You think that's something in the back of his mind maybe?
I think he definitely wants to win. You know, I'm not sure how he wants to do it, but I mean, Ben has some kicks, bro. Like, when we fought our first fight, he has some, you know, he comes from a Taekwondo background too. He has, you know, he does some karate experience. I saw him doing an interview talking about how he was doing them shin kicks to me. He learned from a karate guy. But I think, you know, it's just my style. Like, when I fight, I'm not trying to be flashy. That's just how I fight. You know, like, when I jump, I spin. That's just how I grew up training, you know? So I feel like I think he definitely wants to win. And I know, like, with this rule set, we got 3-minute rounds. It's one of those things I just got to be on my game the whole time.
When do you think you'll know? You know, a lot of people talk about jiu-jitsu when they step on the mat. It's like that first class. They know I've fallen in love with this. When do you think you'll know about Karate Combat? Because you have mentioned that you want to continue boxing as well.
Oh man, what Karate Combat has put together is a platform for traditional martial artists to compete at the highest level. Because when MMA came up, you know, all the traditional guys like me, I was, you know, third degree black belt competing in taekwondo competitions since I was a kid, there was just no place for us to perform at. You know, like when the ISKA tournaments went away, and not really went away, but they just kind of fell back from UFC. So all of us kind of had to change our game plan. You know, if we wanted to be the best martial artists, we had to do mixed martial arts. So I think Karate Combat has gave us a platform to, you know, compete at this highest level. And they're still building, man. Like I love what they're doing with their production. Everything that I've done so far was very professional.
You know, your name gets brought up a lot because you've, like you said, you're a martial artist and you've competed in just about everything you could possibly do. But your name got brought up in BKFC. And when it got brought up, nobody went, "You're crazy." We all went, "Hey, that'd be a lot of fun." Would you be open to something like that, Anthony? And BKFC, Mike Perry, someone like that?
I mean, that's definitely different than something I've ever done before, man. Like that bare knuckle stuff, that's like real like fighting, bro. You know, you're gonna get cut. You know, I mean, I think Eddie had like two broken orbitals after that fight. So, I mean, I would have to talk to my wife about that one. But I mean, I feel like man, I'm up for anything, bro. I've boxed, I've done mixed martial arts my whole life. Now I'm gonna be doing karate combat. So I wouldn't say no to it, but it's something I definitely would have to like talk to my coaches about, talk to my team about, make sure it made sense for, you know, everything.
Something tells me a guy from Milwaukee has probably done the no, bare knuckle. Just it wasn't legal, you know what I mean? But
I had the crazy thing about me is, man, like before I got into mixed martial arts, I was always into street fights. And then my mom put us into mixed martial art. Taekwondo was our first martial art, and
yeah.
It taught me to respect the discipline, you know, the self-esteem of what I'm doing as a martial artist. And you know, I don't think I was in a street fight ever since then. You know, like as a kid, once I started, you know, understanding the meaning behind martial arts.
Did you get kicked out of a lot of schools?
Not, it was before any of that happened. It was like there's kids in the neighborhood. We had a trampoline. We took the trampoline out, so we had like just the circle of the inside of the trampoline, and we'd all just go after it, man. So I had cousins that boxed, and then me and my brother had the kicking, and like, you know, we already like had an experience with that. Bruce Lee basically made me a fan of that. So we would take all the kids from the block, and we would go at it, bro. Like we'd have two guys in there, see who was the best.
Nice. You still keep in touch with those guys? And have those guys become fans of yours, being that you took it to a whole nother level?
Yeah, so I just had APFC in Milwaukee, and I had them all out there, bro. So yeah, they all show the respect. A lot of them break dance now, which is crazy. They transferred into break dancing because I used to break dance too as a kid. But so one of the guys is named Antonio. He started a club for kids that can't afford, you know, underprivileged kids. He has a huge break dancing club out in Milwaukee. So I brought him out to the show. They were doing a little
That's cool.
performance for us. It was cool.
Yeah, all right. Were you more like the popper, or you were
Power
doing
moves. Yeah, I was a
power
power move guy. Windmills, flares, head spins. I used to do head spins on a cement. That was like kind of what I was known for. Like I would just go out there and do head spins on no cardboard or linoleum, none of that shit. I'd just go right on the cement and head spin.
Have you ever posted any of that from on your Instagram or anything from back in the day? Do you even have footage of that?
I don't even think I have footage of that, man. Actually, you know what? So we used to do the halftime show for the Bucks. So
Get
I
out
mean,
of
I'm sure.
here.
Yeah. So we're into it, bro. Like yeah. So like. The Christians, it was called the Christian Center. It was the center for like all the kids that, you know, after school they had nothing to do. We would all go hang out there, and like a couple of kids were break dancers, and then my whole crew just got into it, and then it was like crew versus crew, and then we all came together and we formed like this, I guess, a crew to go to the Bucks, and we were doing halftime shows at the Bucks.
Wow. All right. Yeah, you must have been pretty good if you got
I
on
can
their
still do it,
radar.
bro. Yeah, my older brother. So my older brother was good too. Serge never really did it, but you know, me and my older brother were definitely into it. We had cardboard at every family party. We'd pull it out. We were always practicing.
You remember back in the day, Alfonso Ribeiro used to sell a cardboard and some kids would buy it and it was tailor-made for that? I mean, I'm talking about 30 years ago when it was first starting
Bro,
out.
we would go around to like Walmart, Targets, and find just the big TV boxes, and we would just break them all down, tape them up on the bottom, and then you'd put it out right in front of your yard.
That'd be one hell of a way to, you know, you get the KO or something, and then you do that celebration.
Maybe hit some windmills. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. All right, last question here. Since we've talked break dancing and street fights and karate combat and everything, just because we have to brush up on our interviews, we talk to you all the time, but still, one thing that jumped out of me was you left on a 2-fight win streak at age 33 from the UFC. Why did that happen? I mean, you were a guy that could fill a fight night card at the top as a main eventer. You could pay-per-view headline. You did it. You won a world title. Was there ever a clash at the end, or did you leave on good terms? Would you ever even go back? Are you done with MMA? I know it's a long question. Maybe you can cover that for us.
No, I left on great terms, honestly, bro. Dana White's like one of the guys that I have the most respect for. Like, I always tell him every time I see him, bro, I'm like, thank you for everything, because he allowed me, man. I bought my mom her house with, you know, the UFC, with what I've done in the UFC. So yeah, I mean, no bad terms at all. I'm actually, my fight show is on UFC Fight Pass, so like, I still have APFC. I still do business with them. I mean, I'm at the PI all the time. I see him at all the fights. The reason why I left during the time I did is I kind of fought everybody. I fought everybody at 55. I moved up to 45. I moved down to 45. Then I went up to 70. My last two fights were at 70. And, you know, I was kind of like in a position where I'm like, man, what else can I do for this company? Where else can I go? And then, you know, I knew I was a prize fighter. So I was looking for the next best opportunity. And at that time, man, PFL came out with a crazy opportunity for me. Like, I think I was a free agent for like less than a month. And I went down to Miami. I met with my agent, and you know, he said, "Yo, we got a couple opportunities. Like, do you want to hear him out?" And PFL came with a strong one. They allowed me to be at a box still. They allowed me to kind of do what I wanted to do, like as far as like outside of MMA. And that's what I was kind of looking for. And I knew I like even now, like it took me a little bit of time to box, but I this year I will definitely have some big boxing fights.
Are you contractually still with PFL?
I have a pay-per-view fight with them. I think that's going to be April or May. I'm waiting for them to announce that. But yeah, so my MMA fight will be one more with the PFL, but I'm allowed to do this karate combat. I'm allowed to box. So I'm kind of making money everywhere.
I only ask because Thompson's fighting here next month. You beat him. Oliveira was on a tear for a long time. You know, you beat him. You beat some guys that are maybe no longer there, but obviously, you know, you're a pretty damn good lightweight. And even old Jim Miller's still chugging along, and I remember you beat him.
Clay,
and so,
Clay Guida's over there, brother. So many guys that are still, you know.
That's why I wondered if there was ever a chance.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say no to that, bro. I think, you know, if the opportunity made sense, I definitely would, you know, explore that. I mean, earlier this year, I was thinking about, you know, trying to do another comeback in the UFC. But, I mean, I want to focus boxing this year and then those karate combat deal. And, you know, I already have my MMA platform right now. So I feel like I'm in a great position to, you know, make a lot of money as a prize fighter.
Yeah, no, definitely. Three boxing, karate combat, that PFL pay-per-view. Hell, your 2024 is booked. But, hey, doors are open. And you do seem to conduct yourself as a professional prize fighter. Like, no hard feelings here. You know, there's no bad reputation on the street that we hear of. So,
yeah.
That's awesome. All right, man. Well, listen, thanks for always giving us some time here on MMA Junkie Radio. Good luck with the rest of your training for Karate Combat, which comes up, folks, on December 15th, free on YouTube. Go to youtube.com/karatecombat and subscribe and check it out. He will be dancing against an old foe, Benson Henderson. Thank you, Anthony. Great talking
to you. Appreciate it, guys. Have a good one.
You think Showtime's going to take me up on that, Goes? You think he's going to break dance after his fight if he wins?
I think that'd be cool. Why not, right? Just spin on your head and on concrete. I got to imagine. Well, the mat might burn, huh? But still.
I think one of his cornermen should have, like he said, just go to Best Buy, find one of them TVs that someone discarded or whatever, and you'll have your
cardboard,
you know, box, the cardboard, and you can spin on that. That was funny. He just threw that out there. I would have never guessed it. But so his crew was so good, they did it for the Milwaukee Bucks.
Yeah, there's got to be footage somewhere. If it were WWE, it'd be easy, right? You just grab a sign from one of the thousands of signs that are in the crowd. Are you allowed to bring signs at a UFC?
That's a good question. I mean, you can bring flags, so I wouldn't see why not. I don't know if you could just bring it and hold it there, but why hasn't someone done that?
I don't know.
What would be your sign?
Just bled, maybe.
How about, hey, Dana, promote me to better seats or something like that? Right. You never know, right?
Yeah. I think at what point do you just give up? Like, swing bout?
Yeah. You just enjoy where you're at. Bryce Mitchell is stepping in for Giga Chikadze. Chikadze tore his groin while training for his upcoming fight against Josh Emmett. Heck, we had Giga Chikadze on the show. We talked to him, and he was ready to go, man. This was about a week ago. A few days after that, apparently, this took place. So Bryce Mitchell steps in. It is short notice, and maybe I'm being a little harsh on the whole Tim Elliott situation. He's kind of doing us a favor, I suppose. But, yeah, him versus Josh Emmett, Josh Emmett goes from facing a dangerous striker to now a dangerous grappler. Now, where he's at, and look, he's a veteran. He's faced all kinds of tough cats, right? But where he's at, luckily, it's a gym that has all kinds of killers that can test you in many ways. But I guess I'm glad that he took the fight.
I was just about to say that. Like, just think about the rounds that you're getting there with some of the guys that have very similar skill sets, right? Like Elkins, Faber. I bet you Castillo even gets in there. I mean, like, that's, they're just constantly pushing you. So this one might not be as big of a shock as maybe finding out you got to face Tim Elliott.
Yeah, this is true. We had, well, I guess I'll save that one for just a minute. There was another switch. Well, this is a nice fight booking that was just made. Macy Barber against Caitlin Chookagian. This is UFC 299. This one will be in March. And I believe this is the one that's going to be headlined by Sean O'Malley versus Marlon Vera. I'm not sure of the location. I don't think that's been released. We just know that in January, UFC 297 is in Toronto. In February, UFC 298 is in Anaheim. But in March, UFC 299, I don't know where this is taking place. So all I can tell you is this fight's been added. Macy Barber's been on a roll, goes. And Caitlin Chookagian, she's been like a John Fitch was to the welterweights. She's beaten everyone but the champ. So it's a great test for Barber to see if she's ready to take the next step. Who's 8-2, by the way, in the UFC.
I immediately, when I hear matchups, try and break them down in my head. Like, what do I see happening? And this one's one that I feel can go many ways because they are two really tough opponents. So I think it's going to be interesting, and I have a feeling it might get lost in the shuffle a little bit. But come fight night, you should be excited about this fight because it should be good.
I'm a Macy Barber fan. For one, I thought, you know, her being the future, she was too young at the time to even come by the Mandalay Bay. You had to be 21 to come in. At first I was like, take it easy, Macy, you know, breaking John Jones's record as youngest champ ever. That's not easy, but okay. And then she took a couple losses. She had an injury. She was down on herself, but man, she's picked herself up. She had some nice wins, but then when we met her at the expo, she could not have been more down to earth. I became a Macy Barber fan. And of course her fight against Amanda Hivas was something else.
Oh, it was a great fight. And she had just come off of that, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it was like only a week before or something like that. She always seems like she's in a good mood. She always seems like she's training. So I think overall that fight's going to be a good one.
They're rounding out the card. So far, it's Vera challenging O'Malley. Pretty sure that's your main event. Barber against Chookagian. Pedro Munhoz against Kyler Phillips. And Asu Almabayev versus CJ Vergara. So they're still slowly putting that fight card together. And this will give me a chance to plug something. On our website, whether you go through the free app that we have for mobile phones and tablets, or if you just go to our laptop or go on your laptop or desktop to our website, there's a tab there called Schedule. Click that and you'll have all the information to all the upcoming cards, dates, locations, times. If the info's been released, we're all over it. Like this fight card, we just know that UFC 299 is taking place on March 9th. It's a pay-per-view. I told you who the headliner is. I don't know the information, although in the article, it does say Miami is the front runner for this event. And it makes sense because last year they went to Miami and they said they hit a home run. So I could see them wanting to go back. It's a red state. By that, I mean, those have been the easier states to work with for the UFC and commissions and everything since coming back from the pandemic. So I could see that one almost being a slam dunk for them. And remember, in March, they used to come to Las Vegas, but they're not doing that this time. UFC 300, though, is in April. I could see that one being in Las Vegas. So kind of makes sense that this one time in March, it wouldn't be in Las Vegas. It was the first week of March for like the last 7 or 8 years. Here in Vegas, you could count on it, but not this time. This time, they're going to, the rumor is, Miami. So, anyway. And then there was one other fight booking that I wanted to go over, and then we're going to talk to Michael Chandler. And I'm not sure if I have it. Do you know which other one there was? Or did I cover them all? I guess I already said Muhammad Mokaev is fighting Alex Perez in Saudi Arabia in March. But I think that might have covered it. Molly McCann makes strawweight debut, guys. Did you hear about that one?
No.
Molly McCann, who's been a flyweight, she's facing Diana Belbita at strawweight at UFC Fight Night on February 3rd. You know, if she can retain that power and get quicker, she could be a little bit of a problem, you know, because of the power. But Zhang Weili is something else. And Rose, who's, I don't know if she's going to come back or what she's going to do. She's tough as well. Carla Esparza, I'm not sure if she's ever coming back. Did she have her kid yet?
Yeah.
Carla Esparza?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool.
Maybe 3 months ago or something.
Yeah, who knows if she'll come back or not. But anyway. All right, Michael Chandler. It's been a while since we had him on the show. We'll bring him back. He's got a lot going on. We got to talk to him to see when this fight with Connie Mack might go down and about his new business venture. What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes always deliver the big names. Michael Chandler joins Junkie Radio again. It's been a minute, Michael. How are you, sir?
I'm good, man. Good to see you guys, man. Junkie Nation, what's up?
Awesome. Hey, listen, the tequila brand Hiatus and you are in a partnership, right? I want to get this straight. You're just not the fighter that's sponsored or nothing like that. It's partnership is different. Sounds like you're along for the ride on many different fronts. Not just promoting it, but this is part of your business portfolio, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, as you guys know, man, I've spent my entire career with kind of an entrepreneurial mindset, not just relying on that one fight paycheck, but taking that fight paycheck and then turning it, you know, sending it out and letting it go find friends, if you will. This is not a brand ambassadorship. This is an actual business partnership. I made an investment in Hiatus Tequila. I am in the mission that Christopher DeSoto, our founder, started a couple of years ago. And, you know, his goal was to take Hiatus tequila for tequila people that is authentically and true to the actual heritage of what tequila is supposed to be, aside from the new age tequila stuff that's on the shelf. So it's been awesome. And I knew from my first conversation with him that I wanted to be in business with him. I wanted to be part of his mission. So he was courteous enough to let me invest in the company. And now we are business partners, and we are excited to take it to all corners of the earth.
Does this come from the days, University of Missouri, you and the boys afterwards, sipping on some tequila? I know you spent some time down in San Diego. Maybe you crossed that border to Tijuana and came across tequila then. When did the love for tequila come?
Man, it's actually funny. You know, when you bring up, you know, back in the college days and that kind of stuff, a lot of people, and I spoke to Chris DeSoto, our founder, about this, a lot of people's first experience with tequila is not so great, right? You know, you go to a bar, maybe either you're having a shot at tequila or you're drinking some of these other tequila companies that we will not name, but you know, it's just not, it's not pleasurable. It's not enjoyable. It's not a good taste, right? But once your palate, you know, once you start getting to a place to where you can actually start buying or purchasing or be around people who actually have a love for good tequila made in the right process with the right distilleries and not a bunch of stuff added and rectification processes and some of the stuff that's on the market these days, you start to actually realize, okay, this is what tequila is supposed to be like. This is what an agave spirit is supposed to taste like. So as I got a little bit older and I was able to start, you know, dabbling in buying good tequilas, my love for tequila started probably once I was living in San Diego and then moved to Nashville after that. And once my friend introduced me to Hiatus, he said, hey, you got to try this tequila. It's the best tequila I've ever had. Then from the first sip, I loved it. I bought a case of it from Hiatus, passed it around to all my friends. They all loved it. And I said, hey, there's something here. I need to meet this guy. I need to meet the guy who created this. And lo and behold, here I am. He was, like I said, gracious enough to let me invest in the company. And now we're going to be on this mission to spread the word.
Michael, it's been about a little over a year since the last time you competed. And I wanted to ask you, did this pursuit start even before that? Or was this something that I guess you were able to maximize the time that you weren't fighting to, again, add to what you want always wanted to do? And that's have businesses across different platforms.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was actually introduced to Hiatus a little bit before that last training camp. So last late summer, September-ish or something like that. And then obviously everything moved forward with obviously the rest is history, me actually meeting the founder and then making an investment in the company. And this has been a pursuit that's been happening over probably about the last year. Obviously we just made the announcement in the last 24 hours, but this to me feels like forever, an announcement we've been trying to make forever. But yeah, we're, as far as Hiatus goes, man, it's been about a year and it's been awesome. And we've built out a team and a strategy and our growth path actually includes, Nevada. So, I'm heading out to Nevada for UFC 296, I believe. What is that? The one in a couple weeks. And so we're going to be sipping some Hiatus out there, visiting a couple of accounts because we're going to be expanded to Nevada soon. So we'll have to toast some good Hiatus tequila with you guys.
Yeah, I think I know some guys from Nevada that might be
tequila. Yeah, I got you guys.
Hey, Michael. So having a business, you're right. This is something that from day one has always been on your mind. You've always talked about that. When we interview you about mixed martial arts, we always talk a little business as well. So it is something that I know you've been talking about. But once fighting resumes, once you get your fight, your date, everything's good to go, how much of it gets put, no pun intended, on the shelf? Or how much of it is day-to-day? What role does it play in your life at that point?
Yeah, a lot of it will be being put on the shelf all around the country while I'm training. The good thing in the way that I've always looked at it is I've been a part of an individual sport, right? I was the 157 pounder at Mizzou. I was the 152 pounder at Northwest High School. I'm the an individual fighter at all the gyms that I train at. But without the team, without the training partners training with you side by side, without the coaches teaching you what you need to know, the game plan and the striking, the wrestling, the grappling, all the different aspects of it. Without the people, there is no success, right? So yeah, I'm not the head of sales and I'm not the head of marketing and I'm not the head of the CEO. I'm not the CEO and I'm not in all these roles where 24/7, I'm going to have to do all these business decisions. I know my role and my role is to help with the ideas, to help grow ideas that will help the forward trajectory of the company in coinciding with and in conjunction with the great team that Hiatus has. So right now I'm not training for a fight, so I have a lot of extra time. When I go into training camp, Monica, our CMO, knows she can't be saying, hey, we need you to do 10 interviews in one day. I'm like, hey, I'm training, right? So you can kind of, it ebbs and flows, but everything ebbs and flows when it comes to business, when it comes to relationships, when it comes to life, training, everything. So I've gotten pretty good at kind of compartmentalizing it all, and I can work on it when I can work on it, and I can be fully and solely focused on training when I need to be training, focused on my family when I need me to be focused on my family. And I do a pretty decent job of juggling it all. And like I said, it all goes back to the people. The reason I love Hiatus isn't just because of the beautiful bottle and the actual tequila inside of it, but the people and the mission behind it. And you can't grow without people. And we got some great people. So we let them do their work, operate within their gifts, and I'll operate within mine.
You know, I'm 54 going on 14. So bear with me here. All right. Tell me if this is the craziest thing you've ever heard or what. Scratch your walkout song and come out to da 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 da. And the whole crowd just goes, tequila. Come on, Michael.
Hey, man, that's a freaking good idea. Hey, luckily our CMO should be on the call right now. She's probably going to take.
She's writing it down. She's already writing it down on her pen.
Monica's the mastermind behind.
That's brilliant.
Yes, Monica is the mastermind behind all of our marketing stuff too. That's a freaking pretty good idea. We'll at least do some cool social content or something with that song. But that's genius. I like that.
All right. Now, of course, we miss you fighting in the sport, man. You're the type of guy that we love to cover, guy or gal, because you define the word fight. When you get in there, it's a freaking fight. And of course, it's been a while. And I know that this is tied up with the return of your opponent or whatever, but can you kind of give us, I guess, an idea? Because we just want to see you fight, Michael. We've seen you fight even before Michael Chandler blew up, right? And so we've been on this ride. We heard UFC 300 in April, and then the coach of the opponent came out and said maybe International Fight Week. What can you update us? When do you and the Irishman throw down?
Man, nobody wants a fight announcement more than me. But I, as of right now, I've just been told it's definitely happening the first half of next year. Obviously, speculation would say that, you know, January, February, March, they're all booked. They're ready to announce this big UFC 300 card. I'm sure today was Tuesday. They were a couple miles away from you guys at the UFC headquarters talking about all the different matchups and putting together probably some really cool super fights and whatnot. So when you have a card such as UFC 300, which people have rumored us to be on, I have not been told UFC 300, but I sure would not say no, because that's going to be a nice big card. I would prefer that. That would be awesome. But you guys know me, I'm always in the gym. I'm training. At this point, I've already waited a year. So what's waiting another couple months? You know, each month that goes by, I'm kind of like, whatever, man, I'm still on hiatus, you know? So it's kind of fitting, right? Hiatus. I've been on this hiatus for a year, and, there's been a lot of good things that have come from this hiatus and spending time with my family and finding out exactly who I am outside of just the fight game and being a fighter. But I got a you know, hat tip to Connor and Coach Kavanaugh. You were alluding to Coach Kavanaugh talking about July and all this other stuff, man. These guys are master manipulators of the storyline. They love to say little things that are true or are not true, or they're so blatantly obvious that they sound like they're not true, dropping little breadcrumbs, making you guys, the media, myself, the opponent, and everybody else in the entire world on pins and needles, wondering what the real information is. These guys are very, very good at the art of mental warfare and saying whatever they need to, whether it be calling out other fighters, talking about the trilogy with Nate Diaz, pushing it back to July, then talking about fighting in December, then talking about the UFC's keeping me from my livelihood, all these different things that just may or may not be true. So I'm staying the course. I'm focused on becoming the best version of myself for when I do get in there and compete against the greatest comeback in combat sports history. Connor keeps calling it, and I believe I finish him within the first two rounds, and then we sip some tequila after.
There you go. But I do want to be clear on one thing, because people will pick words apart. When you say you are willing to fight at 300, but we've established that Kavanaugh said his guy might return in July or whatever, did you mean you would fight someone else at 300 if given the opportunity, or are you solely focused on McGregor?
I'm solely focused on McGregor. I was merely saying that I believe it's smoke and mirrors, and I don't think they have any intention on waiting till July. I've been asked numerous times, hey, what's the hard date that you say, hey, when I get to this date, I'm calling up Hunter, I'm calling up Dana, and I'm going to say, hey, okay, screw Connor, I want to fight somebody else. I don't have that date in mind. We're going to get to the end of the year. I'm going to enjoy a beautiful Christmas with my family here in Nashville, Tennessee, which I don't always get to do in this beautiful thing we call the fight game. And, once the first of the year hits, we're really going to start, you know, putting rubber to the road and trying to figure this thing out. And well, hopefully we get an announcement that first month or so of 2024.
Michael, is this going to feel any different? Because you've had huge fights in your career, belts, accomplishments. But will this one have a different taste, a different feeling because of who he is and because of maybe a little bit of the weight as well?
Yeah, I mean, the weight is definitely going to add a little bit of fuel to the fire. You know, I also been thinking about, like I said, I've done a lot of work on myself of who I am outside of just fighting, right? And I don't need to fight. I want to fight, right? I could lay the gloves down right now, and we're talking about hiatus, and we're talking about these other companies, we're talking about investments, and we're talking about the business mind and the business relationship that I have. I don't have to fight. I want to fight. I enjoy fighting. So once you get to the point and you cross over to where you don't have to do something anymore to live, but you want to do it, you want the biggest fights possible, man. You guys were my first big interview back in Mandalay Bay or whatever it was. And Randall Allman said, hey man, you know, my manager said, you guys got to get this guy on. Right. And ever since then, that's why we get into the sport. We want the biggest fights possible under the brightest lights against the biggest name opponents. And that's who Connor is. And that's what this fight means to me. That's why I am not changing course or changing direction, because I'm fighting Connor and he's fighting me. He has to go through me to come back to the UFC. So, you know, I'm excited about it. I still believe it's going to happen. I'm 100% positive that it's going to happen, barring any kind of crazy circumstances in this fight or in the future. Man, I just want Battlegrounds of epic proportions, and it doesn't get any bigger than me versus Connor.
It's always great catching up with you, Michael. Hope to see you soon in Vegas. And thanks for the time today.
Heck yeah, man. Thank you, guys. Yeah, holler at me when I'm in Vegas that week. I'll come by the studio.
Okay, nice. Sounds great.
We might even sip some tequila. I don't know.
Oh, definitely. I know I am. He's sticking to his guns. He says he'll wait. He's waited this long. He'll just continue waiting.
He's got it, right? I mean, you're in this deep.
Yeah, I guess the one thing I'd like to ask him is there just this huge drop-off in terms of the money you're going to get paid? Is it that, or is it just you want to be locked in with the Irishman on a fight week and soak up everything that comes with it?
I think so.
Because, you know, a lot of time has gone by, and if he could have racked, I mean, it's been over a year. If he could have racked up two wins, now all of a sudden people are talking about you. Remember, it was 18 months ago that Armin Sarukian lost to Mateus Gamrot. Gamrot went on to become an alternate. They didn't use him, but he became an alternate. And look at Sarukian. He's now won three straight, and he's in a pretty solid position. Mm-hmm. So a lot of fighters can right that ship pretty quick, but this one's the unicorn. That's the unicorn matchup, and he's sticking to his guns. I'm not going to hate him for it. I just hope McGregor doesn't punk him and go in another direction.
Oh, that would be just the ultimate worst thing that could happen to a fighter. But I think one thing that doesn't get talked about in this situation too is the fact that if he does fight him, don't look at it as just one fight, one big payout. Because who knows, if it's that good, maybe they fight a second time and it's even bigger, right? Like, you never know. There's just so much. The door is so big when you're attached to Conor McGregor that I think he's just in this far. I'd just like to ask him one day, like, how much do you think you would have made, you know, had you fought two other guys or something? Like, how crazy is the money going to end up being? We don't know.
Exactly. Maybe it's not the money and it's this. Congrats on Hiatus Tequila for him, by the way. That's could be very lucrative. I think Howlerhead's done well for Dana White, and Prime did well for Logan Paul, and 12 yeah. Proper 12's done well for Conor McGregor, and I'm not sure what Masvidal's status is with his mezcal, I think it's called, right, or something like that.
Yeah, he like in the interview, he goes, "Hey, Hiatus, like what I'm on." I actually thought it was called Hiatus because it was something that came about while he's been gone, but I guess that is just a coincidence. Maybe I don't know either,
but he's an investor, which is what McGregor was. I saw them differently. I saw McGregor's more like, all right, I have a popular name. How much are you going to pay me? Let's do this. I really see Chandler as someone who would fly to Mexico or fly wherever and tour and look into this and go after it from that standpoint. I might be wrong. I've heard McGregor talk about the whiskey and, you know, beers and how they're poured and things like that. And so he's no rookie in that department. But, you know, if you'll recall, there was a genesis to the breakup between Artem Lobov and Conor McGregor. And Artem swears it was his idea.
Mm-hmm.
He says, you can make a lot of money, but I think you would do well with this. And the other guy said, all right, let's run with it. But I can't wait to taste it. I'm a tequila fan. And good for Michael Chandler. Maybe this will be the more lucrative business decision he makes all of his life, even above fighting. I'm telling you, you get yourself attached to a drink that takes off. You know, Kobe Bryant goes, what was the name of his drink?
It's right behind you, no?
I forgot it, though.
Liverpool. Oh, my God. What was it? It's the purple one right there, right?
Body Armor. That's right.
Yeah.
He made more from Body Armor, I believe, than from playing basketball.
Really? I thought he made 60 million or something like that.
And it was a pretty quick sale. No, I think it was 200 million.
Really?
Which even then, you wonder if Kobe might have eclipsed that, because towards the end, he was probably making 30 million a year. Who knows what? Maybe he said that, or maybe he said in the last 10 years I played basketball. He said something where I was just blown away.
Wow.
But it was a lot. It was a lot. That thing just really, really took off, and they sold it. And I think Coca-Cola bought it, or maybe Coca-Cola bought the Logan Paul one. But
it says 400 million.
For Kobe or for that company?
Kobe Bryant scores, I don't even know what the hell this word is, for his family as investment in body armor yields 400 million.
There you go.
Good God.
Now, he played like 20 seasons, and I don't think he made 20 million a year all those seasons. I'm sure his rookie contract, he made a lot less, and I'm sure a few seasons he made more, but I'm telling you, I think he made more from this than from basketball.
Mm-hmm.
That's nuts, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, folks. So one more reminder. No, two reminders. One, the watch along on December 16th for UFC 296. We talked about that matchup with Brandon Royval challenging Alexander Pantoja for the UFC flyweight title. Brandon Moreno is your alternate in that fight. The main event is Colby Covington as he tries to wrest the title from the champ Leon Edwards. I'm not sure who the backup is there. Have they revealed it? Is it a Bilal Muhammad? I think Bilal said he wouldn't do it, but
yeah.
Have they revealed who that might be?
I don't think they have.
Well, I got to guess. I'd put him at the top of the list, right?
Yeah, but I think you're right. I think he did say he wouldn't do it.
Yeah, so I guess I don't think they would do it with Usman, because Usman just threw down with Khamzat Chimaev. So, Gilbert Burns, I doubt that. And we know Shafkat is fighting Thompson on the same card. I guess maybe that's it. Since they have other welterweights on their card, that's almost like their insurance. We also have Ian Gary versus Vicente Luque. So they have four welterweights also on that same card. Maybe they just feel like that we don't need to have a specific guy. Mm-hmm. But if it was going to be someone, can't be Sean Brady. I don't think he would have told us by now. He just fought Kelvin Gastelum. Gilbert Burns, but he's working off losses too, so I don't think it'd be him. Yeah. He beat Magny and Masvidal, but lost to Bilal. But if Bilal didn't want to give it to Burns, would Bilal allow that to happen? You know, I don't know. Anyway, that night we will have a watch along, and then every Monday, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, spinning backlick. You got to catch it. Great show, lasts an hour. It's live every Monday, and you can participate in it via our chat. We're going to bounce on out of here. Thank you, as always, for tuning in to MMA Junkie Radio. Give us a share and a like and a retweet and all that stuff. We would appreciate it. Go out and be a champion. We'll talk to you on Monday.